Grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer. Well, hello everybody, and welcome to the official 5th anniversary episode of the Dudes and Beer podcast. I am Chris Jordan, your host, coming at you live from Austin, Texas today with our good friends, the stalwart Stephen Bishop is here in the studio. Welcome back, old buddy. Been a dog's age, quite literally. He and audience favorite Mike Turber, how you doing?
Differis.
Oh, there we go. There you guys are. Sorry about that. Steve-O.
Yo, what up?
There he is. All right. Sorry. Because of more people in the studio, there are so many more buttons to juggle. Imagine that. Yeah. Speaking of juggling buttons, before we get into the show, let's please do remember, everybody, that Dudes and Beer is now officially brought to you by PodcastCadet.com. If you're a fan of podcasting like I am, please make sure to stop on by PodcastCadet.com. That is where you yourself can get one-on-one podcasting services, everything from design, branding, audits for a podcast that already exists. If you want to start up a podcast for yourself, friends, family, fun, church, school, whatever, stop on by PodcastCadet.com today and use the code DUDES20 to save 20% off of your entire episode. Steve, I cannot explain to you what it means to have you back in the studio, to have you here, brother.
I'm back on my own show.
Good point.
And you know what's funny is the last couple days I've been going through, of course, combing through stuff.
I sound like Baba Booey over here.
Talking to
my headphones.
Talking to all kinds of people that have been on the show previously, You know, you were there. God, man, from episode 2 on, for a long, long time.
Yeah,
so,
I think it got up to the 300s, maybe. I could be exaggerating, maybe 250. I can't remember. Somewhere.
It was up there. So glad to have you back, man. The world has literally gone crazy and caught on fire since you were here last.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we have our good friend Mike Turber in studio.
Hey,
thank you so much for taking the time out while you were here in Austin on business to stop by the studio.
Absolutely.
You were already scheduled to be on the show today, but the fact that you were in town, it was like, hey,
perfect.
Let's just have him come on in.
Right.
Perfect timing.
Yeah, precisely. So before we get really into the show this evening, guys, we have a very special treat for everyone. We had quite a few of the previous guests on the show send us a little bit of a happy birthday message.
Oh, yeah?
So let's check that out real quick.
This is Graham Phillips, all the way from England, wishing Dudes and Beer a very happy 5th birthday. And look at this, England. My goodness, it's raining. Whoever would have thought that in England? So, Dudes and Beer, have a great 5th birthday.
Dudes and Beer, happy 5th anniversary. Cheers to the next 5 and many more.
This is Dr. John Hall in Bulverde, Texas, wishing Chris Jordan and the Dudes and Beer podcast a happy 5th anniversary. Happy anniversary, Dudes and Beer.
Hello, this is Sev Talk. Congratulations on 5 years, Dudes and Beer. Chris Jordan, you're doing all of us a huge service by helping to expand our minds, broaden the way we think, and to align with our divine purpose. I thank you for everything you do. I've always enjoyed spending time with you and your listeners, and I look forward to coming back. Happy 5th anniversary!
Hi, I just wanted to take a second and congratulate Christopher
and Dudes and Beer on their 5-year anniversary. I've had the privilege of being on the show several times, both with my movie What Happened in Vegas and my new one Money Machine, and Christopher's always been fantastic. Great questions, great guy, and great podcast. So I just want to say thank you to Christopher and Dudes and Beer, and congratulations on your 5-year anniversary.
Hey guys, Daniel Allen Jones here, wishing the Dudes and Beer podcast a happy 5th anniversary. Such an awesome show with great content, very interesting subjects, and congratulations to Christopher for keeping it going all these years. And we're looking forward to all the great episodes still to come. Check it out.
Happy 5th anniversary, Dudes and Beer. Chris Jordan, this is Susan Price, Marine Gold Star mother of Gunnery Sergeant Aaron Kennefic, wishing you the very best. God bless you, Patriot. Thank you for your work. Looking forward to another 5 years plus, and we're going to have a great year ahead.
Hey everyone, it's James Keenan. I just wanted to take a few seconds to wish Christopher and Dudes and Beer a happy 5th anniversary. Hope you guys have a great show on Tuesday. Take care.
Hey Christopher, wanted to wish Dudes and Beer a very happy 5th anniversary. Thank you so much for having Marshawn Heritage Brooms on the show, and we wish you the very best for many years to come.
What's up y'all? It's Billy from Scary Dad. Happy 5th year anniversary, Dudes and Beer. Yeah!
Dudes and Beer, happy 5th podcast anniversary. Dr. Danger here from the rolling hills of Scotland to say, where would the world be without dudes and beer and fire and car crashes and explosions and more beer? Chris, congratulations. Toast a cool one to you. We'll talk soon. We'll set you on fire. Peace. Yippee-ki-yay, mother. Congratulations.
Happy 5th anniversary to Dudes and Beer and all the team, Chris and team members. Thank you for putting the news out there in such a diverse way and having meaningful discussion. Where, there's my cat in the back. She wants to wish you a happy 5th anniversary too. And having meaningful discussions on your website, that there's another outlet for us to actually have frank conversations, and it's not dictated by one organization or news network, but you're really putting everything out there. So enjoy the anniversary. Keep up the hard work. Thank you for doing what you do.
Hey, Dudes and Beer, this is Chris Oglesby from Pretty Cool Art in South Austin. It's always fun hanging out with y'all, and congratulations on all the years.
Hello, I'd like to wish Christopher Jordan, Dudes and Beer, happy 5th anniversary.
Hey, happy 5th anniversary to Dudes and Beer from Radical Empathy. I really appreciate everything that you guys have done for us, and we look forward to not just being, you know, part of the community, but also being your technology consultant and anything else you need. All right, man, more power to you. Let's do it.
Happy 5th anniversary, Dudes and Beer podcast, from Jess at A Billion Realities. Love your show.
All right. Thank you guys so much. I can't tell you what y'all's support means, what the audience support has meant over these 5 years. Oh, hey, I love that. Come on, report.
Oh, you're going way over.
There goes. Yeah. So.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you. That's it. So, yeah, I mean, just the fact that we have been on for 5 years now, I was talking with Scott Ertz of Plug Hits Live earlier today, and I was like, you know, doing the calculation and everything for what is now 280 episodes, y'all, there is better than 15 straight days of Dudes and Beer content.
That's a lot of time.
You can literally listen to Dudes and Beer for 15 days straight and listen to nothing else.
I'll get right on that.
And I encourage that. I encourage that.
Well, I don't know about all of them, but, you know.
Well, it's either that or Tiger King or whatever that's about.
We had some interesting discussions back in the day,
And heated ones.
And heated ones. We had We had a guy straight up leave the show in the middle of the show one time because it got so heated.
It was a good show.
Yeah.
You were asking the tough questions.
That was about the Pulse nightclub shooting.
Oh, I was there.
Yeah, that was utterly wild. And I remember whenever that happened, that was John Bound that was on, actually.
That's right.
Yeah, it was that was a great episode. It was really good. It was one of those moments where really the conversation itself just got to such a passionate point. He was like, I just can't do this.
An argument makes for a good show.
It does. But proper argument. I don't think...
Respectful argument.
Well, and that's just it. Whenever Dudes and Beer first started, if you remember, Steve, we used to read the rules at the beginning of every show.
That's right, yeah.
Wait, there's rules?
Granted, things are a little bit different now because it's much more of a one-on-one discussion show. But yeah, it was the fact of no topic is forbidden, but we cannot call names, we cannot make fun of what somebody believes.
Yeah. No personal attacks.
I
had the same rule on one of my sites, and that was important.
Exactly. Because otherwise you're stymieing conversation. I mean, we've had this conversation on the show before, Mike. 500 years ago, the earth was flat, and to say otherwise...
Perfect.
You were in a whole lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Let's just say that.
Hopefully Jack Sefardi is listening to this. here's the rules. A little physicist fun guy I always have little arguments with.
Yeah. Well, and those episodes, though, I think really did lay a great foundation for discussion, for opening things up, really opening it up to the topics that we talk about now unhindered, and really taking things to the level that we do now where, we have members of Anonymous come to us to break stories.
Yeah,
we have
wild, yeah.
Like, it's been interesting. So, yeah. And then people like Mike Turber as well coming and talking about stuff like we'll be talking about this evening, warp drive technology that... obviously, our government has known about for years. There have been scientific papers floating around on warp drive technology since the 90s.
We're going to go outside and ride one around Austin for a little bit.
Yeah.
And come back in and we'll finish the show.
Where'd you park it at? Right out front?
It's right across the street.
Nice.
Thought I saw it when I came in.
I hit my head on it every time.
The one on blocks as we came in?
Yes. That's the one. Yes. Yeah, somebody snatched my antenna.
I don't live in the best neighborhood. But, it's interesting having both of you guys here because Steve and I go way back now. And you being a fairly new addition to the show here in the last year, literally since the second round of stuff started from CNN and basically what we now know is the Office of Navy Intelligence, mm-hmm. Is who the ATIP program kind of went under,
right.
And things like that. So let's go ahead and start kind of getting into the topic here, Mike.
Sure.
It sounds good.
I guess...
Talk about anything you want.
Yeah, let's start getting into warp drive technology, mm-hmm. How long this stuff has been around, and some of the things that, I guess, are powering it, quite possibly.
Well, that's the question is... For the craft to exhibit the flight characteristics that it does, it has to be able to achieve some ridiculous speeds. And to do so, obviously, the space shuttle had to have tiles. Various other craft have to have all these different things to help it handle the friction. But if the craft is not actually moving,
mm-hmm.
and the space and time is what's moving, mm-hmm. then you don't have to worry about any of that. That's the advantage of warp technologies, because you're basically pulling... You're inflating area behind you, and you're deflating in front of you, and you're basically pulling things to you as opposed to you actually moving through the atmosphere. So there's a lot of questions people have. Why is there no sonic booms? Why is there not a trail of incredibly ionized and plasmas, gases and stuff? So, and that might be the answer. Whether or not I know 100% if that's the answer or not, I don't know, but I'm working on it.
Yeah. Well, and that's just it. Right now I'm actively bringing up, as you were talking about the concept of here is the patent right here for the Alcubierre warp mm-hmm. drive that I'm bringing up on screen as we speak, everybody. And You can see the actual full-on patent here. Feel free to go on to dudesandbeer.com/knowledge to hit up the knowledge vault. Head over to the UFO area, and that's where you'll find all this, folks. If you come over here, just hit up the knowledge vault and then hop down to UFO and paranormal. And these top links right here, Mike sent in a great Nimitz FOIA request also that we'll be getting into.
Absolutely.
But these top documents here, all the way down to the TR-3B patent, will be the stuff that we're talking about tonight, because some of this, like Carrot Q486, really goes back a long way as far as, you know, like it says, the literal title, commercial applications, right, for research for extraterrestrial technologies.
Well, the interesting thing about with Miguel's patent and with what Miguel has done is he did the one paper and then hasn't done anything since. Didn't really have to, because so many other people came on board behind him and basically furthered his work along to make it actually work. And that's what makes the warp drive technology impressive. And what actually got him to do it? An episode of Star Trek.
Right.
Of course.
Always, right?
I don't know much. And like right here, what's really funny, Mike, is the whole apparatus that I was sending you the video of with the Tesla coil and all that fun stuff. I had had the dream about that shortly before you sent me this document. Mm-hmm. And it was like, wow, okay. It was like, all right, I see schematics. So yeah, I've been trying to at least
around for cameras and who do you used to work for, Mike?
Yeah. I've literally been trying to build my own micro-sized version of this.
Yeah.
Just to see what can happen, just to see what can be done.
Well, I used to manufacture stun guns, and so doing those, you can imagine all the different little things that we would try to create to make them a little more powerful, or just to see if we could zap someone from across the room, you know, for something handheld. Yeah, it got interesting.
Really. Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, the technology that's here, the patent here, if you look at it, folks, 2018 is when it was filed. So
2018.
This was right up against October 31st, 2018, literally right at 2 months before the famed Luis Elizondo appearance on CNN.
Well, he appeared on December 16th of 2017. That's when they pretty much announced all the stuff and the videos started coming out.
Yeah.
And then what's really weird is in the last few years, you have to tie in the Salvatore Paez. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his last name right.
Yep.
All his patents, which are borderline absolutely bizarre, but also, you know, in the physics community, everyone thinks it's all gibberish and stuff like this. But there's got to be something there for them to do this and to get those patents approved. So you have to wonder, okay, out of five or six patents or so, you know, this one guy has invented or has patented a compact fusion reactor. That's one.
Yep.
A craft that's capable of basically having zero mass or basically using anti-gravity to fly. And then he has superconductors. He has all these different patents that basically any individual patent on its own would be worth a Nobel Prize.
Yeah.
But he's got five.
Yeah. Well, and what's funny though is that
it's amazing.
Like, he should be.
Yeah.
Like,
should be all over the
place. Yeah, I was gonna say, who's this guy?
Levitation, as far as these things go, has been around for quite a while.
Right.
You know, I mean, we've known about electromagnetic levitation. We've known about being able to basically repel gravitic waves.
You're faking it when you're using magnetics. What this technology does is basically using a repelling gravity. So that's the advantage of utilizing that, is that you're just like a magnets, when you put the two poles against each other, how they push each other apart.
Yeah.
You do the same thing with gravity, and you'd have repelling gravity using negative energy. And that's essentially what you're doing. Is the problem is actually creating the negative energy to begin with, which kind of can easily be done, but not at the quantities.
Are there gravitons in there?
Well, that's what we don't know yet either.
Yeah.
I mean, gravity itself is a theory. You know, you can ask any flat earther that one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is a working theory, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we find out new things about gravity, new properties of gravity, new ways to cheat gravity all the time. I mean, when you're talking about the fact that we, in 2012, actively teleported light.
Mm-hmm.
you know, for the first time in a laboratory. Like that's a big step.
That
to
working with entanglement and things of that nature. I mean, those borderline on the bizarre, but they're real and they actually happen. When you have two particles that are essentially mated together for some reason, but no matter how far apart you put them,
you know,
they'll still interact with each other.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I thought that was...
Exactly. And just to go through and read it right here, folks, you can see where it starts talking about the most bizarre possibility for meeting Earth's power and propulsion needs. It's absolutely wild stuff whenever you're talking about quantum vacuum engineering and literally creating... Basically, the concept is to create a vacuum of time space in front of you.
Right.
That's basically instead of you, because of course you're going to be able to travel faster that way with less resistance than if you're being actively propelled from the back end.
Well, effectively at that point you're taking, you know, space and time is relative, so you're taking an object, and instead of moving the object through space,
you move space around
the object.
Exactly.
Which is a very hard concept to conceptualize for people in their mind. Because you're thinking, I saw that craft move.
Right.
Okay, well, it looked like it was moving.
Yeah.
But precisely. It was really you were moving. And they're like, yeah, it's really hard to grasp sometimes. But once you get some of the basic fundamentals down, it starts making sense.
Yeah. And it, just going through the last week or so and reading through all of these, it really was the concept almost of... like a traveling wormhole.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like the concept of that, where it's like you're not necessarily bending space-time, but you're warping it around you.
Well, that's where a lot of people have a problem with the latest, like the Navy revealing of the three different videos that show those craft. And everyone's saying, gimbal, go fast, and of course the tic-tac. And so when they observe these objects moving at 35,000, 250,000 miles an hour through the atmosphere, the first question goes in people's minds. Obviously, no one could be piloting in it.
Right.
They could, actually.
Working
in quantum field theory, you could definitely do that. How could it do that without creating sonic booms and burning up things in the atmosphere, plasma trail, all these different things? But that's where quantum physics comes in, and it actually answers a lot of those questions. But getting the equations right and getting it actually down into application with the materials necessary to make it, that might be another thing.
Ooh. Yeah. Ooh. Well, and that's just it. I just popped those videos up real quick. That is actually all three of them put together there. And that's what we've had looping down in the bottom of the screen. And it's really interesting because, you know...
it's rotating.
Here's Fast Mover that's just insane. How he was even able to... I mean, don't get me wrong. I know that there's tracking technology on their camera. But to see him actively track onto an object that's moving that fast in real time while he's piloting a plane is just mind-numbing.
Well, here's what's weird, and especially most people are familiar with the case of the Tic Tac. The Tic Tacs came in over Catalina Island at about 80,000 or so feet, but that's the top of where the radar works.
And there was more than one. There was quite a few.
14.
Right?
Yeah, 14 is what they were tracking that day, according to Kevin Day. And these objects, when they were dropping, they would drop from 80,000 feet to 28,000 feet or 28,000 down into the water.
Mm-hmm.
And at such a speed, you know, 0.78 seconds to go from 28,000 feet to 0 feet, you know, you're basically...
That's beyond free fall.
Yeah, you're moving. Yeah, a little bit. Just a tiny bit. Just
a little bit. A little bit.
So could a person pilot it at that point?
If you look at basic physics and just go, no one could survive that. They'd be jellyfied. A pilot in a plane can't handle over 9 Gs, and we're talking about this thing handling 800 Gs or more. So, no, a pilot wouldn't be able to stay inside that and deal with it. However, if you work it into the warp theory and quantum field theory and things like that, you would have no effects of gravity at all. So you're effectively, keep in mind, you're sitting still.
That's
so
right.
You can be in there while you're pulling space towards you.
That's right.
And all that. So that allows you to fly in this thing and not feel the effects of it. Which also is how it works on Star Trek.
And that's what you have to remember, folks, is that
since there is
no propulsion and you are moving space around you.
No G's. Right.
There are no G's. Right. There is no gravitational effect on the pilot. There is no chance of blacking out.
Right.
Things like that. And of course, we've had the conversation before because there was the investigator who talked to Popular Mechanics who said that they very evidently look as though they are piloted via AI.
Correct. And I've been talking to her as well. Now, some of the things of AI piloting these crafts would make sense because obviously at the speeds that it would be attaining. Because you have to relate it to something people can relate to.
Right.
Obviously, if you're moving space and stuff around you, you're not really moving anywhere. So trying to explain that's a lot harder than say, you're effectively moving at X number of miles an hour. That makes a lot more sense. But then the mind starts playing and it's like, well, what happens when you stop? You're splatted against the wall. No, it doesn't have to work.
No, because you're moving space around you. Exactly. You're not actually moving.
Exactly.
Wow.
And that's why it's so hard when you see all the comments on there, people... They start saying, well, no one could be in the craft or the craft itself couldn't handle it because it would have to overcome those number of G's and it'd have to be made out of metamaterials or whatever. Not really necessarily. We have the technology today to do that.
Yeah.
So now we just have to, see if they're actually doing that and try to
Trying to play by rules that don't apply, right?
They make up their own rules as they go along. It's the intelligence community. It's the government. So they get to do whatever they want. But as far as making up the physics rules or whatever, no one's breaking the rules. That's interesting. Because people think, they're defeating the laws of physics. No, they're not. They're actually working well within the laws of physics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Precisely. Yep. And it's within the gray areas of physics, but no different than any observed particle.
Mm-hmm.
Because we already know that technically, guys, like I love both of y'all in different ways, even though we're all men.
Yes.
My electron field is like mixing with people in Indonesia right now, the fact that y'all are physically here is still kind of a theory by all means of physics. So,
are you saying you want to touch me to see if I'm really here?
I'm saying I'm already touching you, Mike.
That's true. We're already entangled. Pinch me, Steve.
We're already quantumly entangled, and that's just
true.
It. Once you start realizing once you start realizing the physics of the fact that the electron is moving so fast that you're literally willing it to stay still as the observer. Like your mindset of, I'm going to take a picture of this moving electron. You cannot literally predict where that electron will be, but you can still take a picture of it. And it's almost as though that electron.
But if you do take a picture of it, it will know. And it won't go through that other slit.
That's right. That's right. And it's weird.
It's like a chaos theory.
That is one of the most bizarre things ever to have that type of a experiment set up, that where if you observe the object, it will actually behave differently than if you don't.
Yeah.
And that's bizarre.
Yeah. But it's repeatable science.
Absolutely.
It is absolute truth.
Yeah.
And people forget this. And you hear people out there, let's talk about science. It's like you realize that science is actively pretty close to magic whenever you start thinking about it.
It's unpredictable almost.
And it's more the fact of you can influence it. Which is why a lot of science really is kind of invalid.
Right.
Because you're not supposed to have, you're supposed to have an expected result, but not be going toward that expected result.
Right.
And most of the time, scientists approach things with very much a confirmation bias and the fact of, I'm trying to disprove this.
Right.
Well, they're expecting a certain result based on what their knowledge of the physical universe is or whatever, and they're not taking into account all of the things that we pretty much shun away a lot. I'm not a known debunker, but there's some things I just can't figure out either, and some things have happened to me that I can't explain.
And when you start looking into that, you start wondering, maybe we are actually entertained. I mean, how many times have you picked up the phone and knew who it was going to be before you picked it up? All these different things yeah. happen to everybody. And then it goes on, you know, surreal levels with some people that are really in tune with that.
Yep. Yeah.
Whatever yep. they
yeah.
have. So, mm-hmm.
Well, and, you know, it's interesting because I contacted Caroline Corey, who is one of the world's most renowned researchers in ESP, paranormal, things like that. When it comes to the way that we interact with the world and manifestation, and her new movie, Superhuman, folks, I'm not getting any money for this. I'm just telling you right now, if you ever watched What the Bleep Do We Know and you were impressed, go pay $10 to watch this movie. It'll smack What the Bleep Do We Know in the face. Straight up. Because as opposed to a bunch of quantum physicists just talking, they actively show lab experiments.
Right. Mm.
They actively show lab experiments where intent alone affects the electrical conductivity of DNA.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard about that.
And when you start talking about that, when you start talking about raising the hydrogen level in water and changing the alkalinity of it.
Yeah, just a minor change.
No, dude, no. That's what the guy was saying, was like typically the variation here would be 0.01. Mm-hmm. Like in an hour or so, maybe. Mm-hmm. So if you can move it by 0.02, that'd be cool. No, bro, she moved it by 0.1.
That works.
Whoa.
And within minutes. So yeah, it really is the fact of we're dealing with strange things, and when you're dealing with strange stuff, you really do have to be ready to kind of throw concepts out of the window. Mm-hmm. It's hard for us as normal people to accept that, hey, wow, we may be able to create a quantum vacuum of space-time and pull something instead of propelling it.
Yeah. And not only that, you're using quantum vacuum, you can pull the energy from the surrounding, effectively, environment.
So the
E equals MC squared means that essentially to achieve the speed of light, you would have to utilize all the energy in the known universe times 100 or whatever. But if you start applying different types of field theory and what have you, you can drastically reduce that number, which is where Miguel's patent was advanced to, you know, Harold, I think it was Harold White at NASA, at Eagle Works, where they actually expanded upon that to get the power requirements down. And then it even went a step further with the Alcubierre Fronting type warp drive, which even goes, you know, 10 steps above, and that has a deflector shield and everything on it, and nothing can interact with it. It's pretty amazing stuff, because that becomes pretty interesting. I think you're going to want to see that one.
Yeah. Holy. Yeah. And, you know, once, I guess it's really wild to see all of this start coming to light right now. Mm-hmm. I know we've had numerous private conversations about the way that things become declassified, the way that they come to public knowledge. Yeah, exactly. And even just to see the soft disclosure, because Stephen was there. We covered
Which
it.
One? Which one?
The first disclosure that happened a couple years ago. Whenever I came back from Christmas with the family, and was like, did you see what they released?
Exactly.
Did you see this?
Yeah. I remember that episode.
And then about a year later was the second episode you were on, whenever they did the whole raid on Area 51 and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, and that was really the second round of soft disclosure from the government, where they basically said, like, yes, these videos are real.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it took them a year of them being out to say, like, yeah, these are real.
Yeah, and there was a lot of controversy around that, too. There was controversy over how Lou Elizondo from TTSA got the videos out in the first place. Whether or not he was allowed to actually show them to anyone, because the forums actually say you can share this with contractors only, but no, he goes straight to the public. Everybody gets to see him, no problem. And he still has a security clearance, and I don't.
What?
I'm like, wait a second. That's not fair at all.
How's this work?
And what's interesting, we've talked numerous times just about the fact that he still holds security clearance. Numerous people at To the Stars Academy still hold security clearances.
Sure.
I haven't noticed a change, though.
Yeah.
I'm still getting the same information.
Nice. Hey, that's all that matters.
Nothing
right?
has slowed down. Nothing has slowed down at all. Yeah, I just left plant 44 day before yesterday.
Yeah,
nice.
That was a lot of fun.
Well, and here is that actual footage from Luis and CNN.
The military official who ran the covert government program up until this last November, Luis Elizondo. Luis, thank you so much for your time tonight. I mean, first, tell us what the purpose of the program was and why it was so secretive.
Sure. The purpose of the program, Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, was really designed to do just that. From a national security perspective, identify those things that we see, whether we see them electro-optically, we see them with radar, we see them as eyewitness reports, through a myriad of different ways and avenues that we receive the information, and try to ascertain and determine if that information is a potential threat to national security, in a nutshell.
So what did you find?
Well, we found a lot. I think it's probably been a little bit mischaracterized in some of the social media you see and what people put out, because a lot of times when we don't have a lot of information, we tend to fill in those gaps with what we think is logical. And there's still, by the way, a lot we really don't know. I think what's important is that we have identified some very, very interesting anomalous type of aircraft. Let's call them aircraft. Things that don't have any obvious flight surfaces, any obvious forms of propulsion, and maneuvering in ways that include extreme maneuverability beyond, I would submit, the healthy G-forces of a human or anything biological, hypersonic velocities, low observability, positive lift, again, seemingly in defying the laws of aerodynamics. So
but do you believe, you know, when you get that Navy pilot saying what he said?
It's interesting to sit back and watch that again, just to literally see what's there.
There's a lot of that. I mean, Lou comes out and he basically, you know, I don't want to call him a liar or anything like that, but he's essentially pretending that what he's saying is factually accurate, that he doesn't know. And if he's, you know, what were they doing for the 5 years or so just like another Project Blue Book, you go out there and you say, oh, swamp gas. Okay. Yeah. We'll use that one.
Yeah.
But they weren't really explaining things out like the same way. But the questions that come up in mind, keep in mind, like with the Tic Tac event and the Roosevelt event, with the Nimitz and the Roosevelt, you had a aircraft carrier that had just had its radar changed out and was upgraded, and now it can see these things, okay?
Yeah.
And so they have that during the Nimitz event, but these things were going on for days. They were seeing these objects for days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they didn't scramble any planes from anywhere to go check these things out. You had an object flying at 80,000 feet at 100 knots. That planes can't fly at that speed. They would. That's too slow. It would just fall out of the sky. It's below its stall speed. So that would make me go, wow, that's not really interesting. Not weather balloons, because it's a constant rate of speed. It's not going against wind, what have you. So let's send something over to check it out. So they wait until the 14th to go check this thing out. So they send a couple planes out. Boom, mm-hmm. boom, boom. First plane sees something in the water. No big deal. He mm-hmm. comes on back. Then Captain Fravor, he goes out there and, you know, he sees this ping pong thing going back and forth as the object and, you know, shaped like a Tic Tac. Yet they asked both of those pilots, the first pilot, they said, do you have any weapons? And the pilot's like, that's a weird question. Now, the first thought that came to my mind the first time
it was a drill, wasn't it?
That's part of it. And the thing that came to my mind at first was like, oh, they must be serious about this. They must need to know he might have to shoot this thing down if it's a threat.
Right.
No, that's not the answer. The answer is they wanted to make certain that he didn't have any weapons because they didn't want him to shoot it down because it's our stuff.
Right.
Which is what we've been saying this whole time is that it really rings – much more to the fact of of it being a cross training exercise, right, unbeknownst to people.
Exactly.
And then,
exactly.
Of course, I think in that same event later on, wasn't there a helicopter that landed on the on the aircraft carrier?
Yes. Yep. Within 12 hours of the incident, you had a helicopter that landed. They COD'd on. They came in and they took all of the data, all communications, every object that could record data, they took it as well. So they took it off the planes, they took it off the CC,
yep,
all of that. And they were reported to be Air Force personnel. Now, why in the world would Air Force personnel go onto a Navy vessel and take all of the data?
Right.
And the captain just go, yeah, that's cool. Yeah. Yeah. Let's go ahead and do that.
Especially from a program that was apparently, well, granted, it moved under the Office of Naval Intelligence after it was shut down.
Right, right. And, you know, it still operates to this day. It's just under a different name.
Yeah.
Slightly different department. I was talking to, conversing back and forth with Eric Davis the other day, and he recently said that that obviously that program's still running, that it's just it's still under DNI or ONI.
So it's still there.
Exactly. Just a different name. Yeah. It's just like what they did with UFOs, because they have people doing FOIA requests, and of course your FOIA request says UFO, and everybody that gets a FOIA request is going, ha ha, I don't have to do anything because they're now called UAPs.
That's right. That's right. I'm sorry, we have no data regarding UFOs.
That's right, and we can be factually correct about that.
Right.
And speaking of that offhand, let's go ahead and bring that up on screen, because we do actively have the FOIA request from the Nimitz encounter.
Mm-hmm.
And there is some really nifty stuff in there. Let's go ahead and bring that up from our knowledge vault.
Yeah, now the interesting thing on that is when you look at it, the second paragraph down, and let me pull mine up here. I'm going to take a look at that. If you look at the second paragraph down, you will see a certain phrase.
There you go, Mike.
Yeah, I got it. Oh, perfect. Wow. Impressive. So basically, it's telling the person doing the FOIA request. Now, this was before the release of the videos. This is...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is December... emailed December 30th, 2016.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So the answer was, in January. So this goes down the list and tells about the different departments inside the Navy that they would need to know which department handles which type of information. But the second paragraph is extremely important. It says, ONI has no records responsive to your request, as it is not within ONI's mission functions. The information you have requested would more likely be under the purview of the Department of Air Force. So basically, that's them saying, we don't have the data. We gave it to these guys over here, the Air Force. So essentially, now that can be taken both ways. You could probably read into that and go, well, that's probably them passing the buck.
Right, right.
Or it's someone sitting there going, I'm kind of tired of these things. Let me...
Yeah.
Just go to the Air Force, dude, and leave me alone. So you have that there. So that might be an indicator. And no one's really brought that information up. But, you know, when it comes down to it, there's very few ways this could happen that would make sense. My understanding that I have since researching this, and also with my source that had made the briefings back in 2005, the way this came about was apparently DARPA was developing some of the technology with some of the universities and some contractors that they had worked with, and that technology was pushed over to Wright-Patterson. And Wright-Patterson is where your Air Force Research Laboratory is.
I love it.
Yeah, and then apparently they worked together with Navy's Research Laboratory, but the Air Force's program was a little bit more advanced and a little bit more on schedule.
Hmm.
And so they wanted to test this real world. They'd already been testing it apparently at Area 51. They have phase radar all over the place, but now they're going to upgrade the Navy vessels to have this upgraded phased array radar, which it's an old radar technology, but it's just super advanced at what they have now. So
let's explain what phased radar is, because I think a lot of people out there may know what traditional radar is.
Right.
Watching,
if
Al Roker and the Doppler report on ABC Monday mornings or whatever it is.
Exactly.
I don't know. Is it NBC, CBS, he's an alphabet something.
I'm Al Roker in this submarine over here.
Yeah.
So the way phased array radar works, as opposed to the other radar, the other radar does a sweep, and normally it's around 6 to 9 seconds before it does a full sweep. So you've got a gap in between the radar returns, and you're basically sending out a signal. You're waiting for the ping to come back.
Yeah, come back.
Yeah. With phased array radar, you don't really have that. You're sending out pulses continuously, and it's just a wide spectrum beam, and it goes out, and you have a live picture of what you're looking at. And you can also track objects no matter how fast they're moving, except they're having a little trouble with the tic-tac. But these objects moving through a space just depends on how fast the modulation is and how fast the return comes back, and the computer processes it and turns it into an image that an air traffic controller or somebody in combat can take a look at and make an assessment to see what it is. But that's the advantage of phased radar. So when they upgraded the radar, these things, which apparently previously were not seen, were now being able to be seen. Well, it just happened to happen as soon as the Nimitz gets its upgraded radar. Boom, 14 of them. You know, things start popping in. And they were, and Kevin Day actually stated that he didn't report or didn't think that they were such a threat at first because they were just moving along at 100 knots, no big deal.
Right.
If you see something at 80,000 feet moving
at 100 knots,
I would still think it's a big deal, even though it's slow. But they still didn't view it as a threat, and he had been training the guys that were on these.
But see, here's my issue: you literally just saw something, going 100 knots, which is just under 100 miles an hour.
Yeah. At an altitude where technically the air's so thin.
It ain't no bird.
No.
Right. Yeah, no bird.
Nope. And it's not a weather balloon because it's moving against the weather patterns.
Yeah. 14 of them.
Yeah. That was on the day that they actually finally did scramble because Captain finally said, "Hey, Captain, can we send somebody out?" And the captain's like, "Yes." And so they send out the aircraft. Aircraft comes back. Boom, boom, boom. They finally send out a third group of planes. You have the first plane that's already out there doing a maintenance check. It sees a disturbance of the water, no tic-tac. It comes back. Then you have the second group of planes, which is where Captain Fravor was, and it sees the tic-tac, and then tic-tac circles up and takes off and is over the horizon in less than 2 seconds. So they say, okay, that's crazy.
Yeah.
But no one had cameras. And Captain Fravor was also asked, do you have weapons on board?
Yes.
No.
I do not.
Right. So then they send out the third planes. They go out and they have the at FLIR pod, and which is your targeting pod, and it was able to capture it in the visible spectrum and in the infrared spectrum. So, the objects are real. But keep in mind, too, the only time these objects are ever seen, we hear about 14, but you only see one at a time.
Right.
So my question at this point, which is a new direction I'm kind of going in based on some information I got 2 days ago, is that this may be a mixture of actual objects and virtual.
And, you know, that's really interesting. Number one, James Samaj, former guest and listener of the show, is talking about the whole quantum vacuum concept and saying, like, so that's why G-forces don't make a difference to the pilots of these craft.
Right.
And it's interesting that you bring up the fact that it's virtual. And that there may be something, a virtual component going on.
Right.
Because I know we've had the conversation before, both on air and privately, about the conversation I had with the owner of a decently large media outlet regarding such things.
Right.
And when it was shortly before I had you on the show the first time that I'd contacted him to be on.
Right.
And I was like, I've followed your work for years. You do some of the best documentaries on this out there. I would love to have you on my show. And he was like, I would love to come on your show. I just don't make public appearances anymore. Radio, TV, I just don't do it. There have been too many people who are researchers that have met with unfortunate circumstances.
Yeah. Yes.
Too many, like, straight-up NASA scientists.
I remember when that happened and we contacted him or you contacted
who have met with strange circumstances, and I just cannot put my family through that.
Right.
But my contacts that I have in the military and in science are telling me this, that should any disclosure come about, it will either be under the guise of them coming to help or the guise of an invasion that will be fake. So the fact that you bring up virtual to me is very interesting, tying those two things together. Right. And I think that it's really interesting that these new revelations are coming about right now. Well, as all the tumult is happening, everything. Number one, it's a great way to just kind of put it out there, mm-hmm. Well, and let it fly under radar, pun intended.
Well, the thing is that the programs that are out there are real. They've been actually one of the programs was actually first utilized back in the 50s.
Yep.
We actually tried to convince Cuba that we had hundreds and hundreds of planes that were on station when in fact they were fake radar blips, and that was using some old technology. Now the current more modern technology that the Navy has been exploring is a program called Nemesis, which actually utilizes quite a few different types of spoofing technologies to essentially make it appear as though there might be hundreds of planes. I mean, imagine you being, you know, watching a radar and all of a sudden, oh, sir, we have 5,000, you know, planes coming in, missiles coming in, all these different things coming in. And hidden amongst those would be the actual real things.
It's interesting, though, because the way that the passive radar system works, it's mm-hmm. basically like it's reading the resistance of the air.
Right.
Just to put it in layman's electrical terms.
Right. Well, the thing about that when they had these on the Nimitz event,
mm-hmm.
you had three different types of radars that were picking this up.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously that particular object had to be real because it was over three different variants and also seen visually. Now, who knows about the other 13 or so that were out there or what have you, but it does bring up a lot of questions. Is this a mix of technologies? The thing is that you have three possible answers. One, it's extraterrestrial.
Yep.
And if it's extraterrestrial, then you don't have to worry about all these other questions. It just takes you into a whole other direction. And two, if it's terrestrial, is it ours? And three, if not, is it theirs and whose? So those are your only three answers. So it's got to be any one of the three answers is still intriguing and rather, you know, incredible because these things are really there.
It's right. Yeah.
You know, it's just what is going on here?
Well, and the question at this point, especially since you bring that up, mm-hmm. is of course, I'm trying to bring up the article. If you hop over to we've got tons of articles always. Oh my god, dude, I am a human octopus, especially now that there's two people in the studio with me.
Okay, I think that if this stuff is coming out, it ain't us. Or some of it ain't. Yeah. Some of it ain't.
Well, and that is precisely the question that has been brought up by our good senators.
Right.
Things like that as well.
And Chris keeps forgetting, my dad was in the Air Force, and he said he was in charge of a room. He was Air Force Intelligence, mm-hmm. in charge of a room that listens to stuff from outer space that's not from us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he said.
Is he in New Mexico or up in Colorado?
He passed away, but he passed away in San Angelo.
Okay.
But he talked about Edwards Air Force Base and various, you know, things that the bases you would always hear about, like on the, you know, when you watch these things, you know. And so, he just dropped little hints. I was like 13 years old or something when he was dropping these hints. And, you know, I wish I could have asked more questions back then. But now he's gone. But, you know, he was just such a, like, blank face when he was saying these things. And I'm like, okay. But, you know, it's like no emotion. You know, I'm like, this is, you know, I got the feeling from him, like, yeah, he's talking about, like, not us, you know. And it was interesting, you know. I'm like, wow, this is... Wow.
Well, the thing is that what I'm bringing forward as far as my theory is what's going on with these particular objects of the three videos that we have is that they're ours. And the reason why I say is if we just – let's remove anything. Let's remove my sources. Let's remove anyone talking to me, or let's even remove my own research.
Yep.
And just look at what we have laid on the table. The facts are these events all happened right after an upgrade on radar. These events, when they occurred, there was no sense of urgency for anyone to actually go do something about it.
Right.
Yep.
If these things were happening over days, in the case of the Roosevelt incident, over months that these objects were seen, and then you can always hear them saying, oh, there's a fleet of them.
Right.
Well, if there's a fleet of something out there in our airspace, or even near us, we're going to go check it out.
Exactly.
But no one did.
Right.
The only answer that makes sense to me is because they already knew that they were ours. They didn't view it as a threat. And they actually say that we did not view them as a threat.
Well,
and then when Kevin Day came back and he told the captain,
that he wanted to go check these things out, and then he comes back and he gives him the report on it, whatever. The captain seemed lackadaisical on it, didn't really seem to care.
Yeah.
And that's because, well, maybe it was a joint effort between the Air Force and the Navy to test new technology that we have, because we had some breakthrough technologies that did occur that I was able to find evidence on with Lockheed.
Right.
You know, in 2014, they put out a video basically stating that they were working on a Polywell-type compact fusion reactor.
Yep.
And so they said that they would have that technology probably within 5 years, and they actually stated that the first object they plan to put it on is an aircraft.
Yep.
To keep the aircraft aloft for many hours or days
right.
at a time.
We covered that. We
sure
did your whole report here on the show.
Absolutely.
Talking
and
about
so
that.
Now that that video is out there. They actually, you know, that video is kind of it's hard to find.
It's a product video.
Yeah,
it's a product video, Jack.
And they said in 5 years we'll have this. Well, this is 2014, so it's 2020 now. Yeah, it makes sense that we would have this
right.
technology now. So you mix that technology with a bunch of other stuff, and then whatever the patents are that they're trying to, you know, that's the biggest.
Now, how does somebody patent some stuff like that we were talking about earlier? You know what I mean? It's like, to me, it's like the guy invents the car that ran off of water. This dude's gone.
Right. Yeah. Well, if the guy actually worked for the Navy, he'd still have a job. Then that's kind of where it came out, because you have Salvatore Paez, who apparently came out with these you know, breakthrough technologies in several different fields, which any one of them would be incredible
so
on its own.
I think it would be fair to say so it has his name on it, but really owns.
But here's what's funny. They're complete gibberish. All of the patents are just, if you actually look at it and apply any actual physics to it or any math to it, you're going to go, ha, 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 they actually approved this?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And that's essentially it. So why would they do that? And then one of his patents actually got turned down. And so what they did was they contacted the patent office and they said, hey, we need you to redo this and give us this patent. And the patent office says, no, this is obviously technology. You're full of crap. There's no way this thing works. And then the Navy comes back and says, not only does it work, we're testing it right now.
Yeah.
And so then they go, oh, okay, in that case, we'll approve the patent. And so they give them the patent. But still, it's a bogus thing. So why would they come out with these patents at the same time that these videos come out and all this other stuff? So all of this, in my opinion, is somehow tied together somehow. It's,
like
me and Chris have talked about quite a bit. Is this their version or variation of a way to do a soft disclosure? Is this... Because if it is,
I think so.
You know, they don't understand all the movies we've been watching for years. We're probably ready now. We're good to go.
Yeah.
And it's desensitized us, I think, watching these movies.
Yeah.
So when they do bring it out, we're like, oh, yeah.
I was like, did you even see Independence Day?
No, granted, this is...
we're ready.
This is not the video that you posted, I don't think, because it's not directly off your channel, but this is directly from Lockheed Martin's advertising channel about Lockheed Martin compact fusion research and development.
Yep, that's it.
And this is some wild stuff, folks.
50 years ago, when people were super excited about nuclear power, we tried to put it on everything, including airplanes. There were some big operational issues that wasn't safe. Fusion is a much safer option. A next generation of airplanes that doesn't rely on fuel and can just stay aloft. Unlimited range, unlimited endurance. That's what nuclear fusion can do for an airplane. So nuclear fusion is the process by which the sun works. If you take a gas and you heat it up, eventually it separates into its ions and electrons. When the ions get hot enough, they can overcome their mutual repulsion and collide, fuse into one piece. When they do that, they release a lot of energy, a million times more powerful than a chemical reaction, for example. What we're trying to do is control that reaction here on Earth. We put it in a magnetic bottle that can contain the high temperatures. You need hundreds of millions of degrees. We can release in a controlled fashion that energy. We think we have a very robust strategy going forward.
He did 5 years ago when this video was made. Mm-hmm.
What this concept does is it's a high beta concept, which means we use a high fraction of the magnetic field pressure. We use all of its potential. And that means we can make our devices 10 times small. So instead of something the size of a building, we have something the size of a large truck.
10 times smaller, folks.
The reason we can do this quickly. If something's small, you can build up momentum, you can develop it fast. It doesn't take 5 years to design it, it takes 3 months. We can design it, build it, test it in under a year. We can do several of these cycles, and we think we can get to a prototype in 5 years. Every time you do plasma physics, you learn something new. And that's why this is a high-risk, high-payoff endeavor. That's what we're doing here, is testing that concept out to see if it really holds the promise that it appears to. And as a defense company, our increasing mission is to enhance global security, and this is how we do that in the energy realm. The world already does 40 gigawatts of gas turbines a year. The gas line going into that gas turbine, we're going to replace that with a heat exchanger coming off our fusion reactor. So we basically use the gas turbine infrastructure completely. We partner with one of those companies, and we ship fusion-powered turbine plants around the world, and we expand that technology. Gas turbines are a huge improvement over other technologies in terms of climate change, but they're only a 50% improvement. We take it all the way. So no emissions, safe operation, proliferation-free. That means we can ship it to the whole world with a good conscience. Now, the old promise of atoms for peace was a noble one, but ultimately flawed because the technology wasn't right for it. We can achieve that grand vision and bring clean power to the world. The true atomic age can start. 10 years, we have great military vehicles. 20 years, we have clean power for the world.
Note the military.
This isn't online
first.
By 2100. This is online by the time I can't even retire after we finish this. No, I still have to find another job after this is done.
Yeah. So there you have it right there. He's basically saying that the military is going to get it first.
Yeah,
precisely. And then we'll put it out to the rest. Well, the thing is that the Navy was actually funding one of the programs with a company called EMC2 or EMC squared.
Yep.
And that company was given 12 to 20-some-odd million dollars to develop a polywell-type compact fusion reactor. And then all of a sudden, the funding to that organization stopped. Hmm. Well, the moment that stopped is about the same moment that it started at Lockheed, because they're already there. They, you know, they have the technology underneath the Department of Defense umbrella at Plant 42, and so all of that stuff is developed within, you know, two buildings of each other. And the thing is that if you have one company, one contractor that's controlling all that. Now, originally when I first came out about this story, I had information that led me to believe that they were only made at Plant 42. Well, that's not the case. So apparently this technology has been bounced around between a few different competing contractors, and that now involves Plant 44. And anyone, you can't, if you actually pull up Google Maps, can't even find Plant 44. But it does exist. I was just there the other day, even if pictures here. And now Plant 44 is virtually completely ran by Raytheon. So Raytheon is apparently delving into this, as far as I believe the Navy's variations are Raytheon based, and then the Air Force versions are Lockheed. And that makes sense, because that seems to be the going history.
That's been the relationship for years and years. The only reason why, literally just about the only competitor that Lockheed has whenever it comes to a weapons program is really Northrop Grumman, and that's because they're the main like Navy and Marine contractor.
Right.
so it's like if you're doing something for the Army or the Air Force, it's, you know, because one branched off the other, it's Lockheed. Yep. If you're trying to look for something,
they're across the runway over there.
Yeah, and that was very much seen in the YF-22, YF-23 concept vehicle race between Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman, all that kind of stuff. One of them was much more designed for the Marines, for hover capabilities. The other, you know, and it's just
always interesting to see how those games play out whenever it comes to the contracts being granted.
Well, that's when they try to do a joint strike fighter that basically is going to be the answer all to everything, which is kind of what the F-15 was supposed to be, which is what the F-18 was supposed to be, the F-16, all these different variations. Like, oh, I can do anything. We'll just put this on it and make it go do that job. You know,
And you ever notice that it just kind of flip-flops from one manufacturer to the other?
Right. And it's like, okay, we'll throw you a bone next time.
You got to spread the love evenly.
Yeah, spread it around. Literally. Keep them in business.
Now, granted, we'll buy UAVs from both of you all day long.
Well, that's the amazing thing is because the UAVs are manufactured by everybody.
Yeah.
Everyone. Yeah. You know, the weird thing is that when you go to Lockheed and you look at what they're making, and I think I may have sent you some secret type photographs there. You may have seen
a few weeks ago.
So you can pull one of those up if you still have it, but if not, no worries.
Are you cloning?
No, I try to deprecate most of those immediately, Mike.
There you go.
My training just tells me to do that. Enjoy it. Get rid of
it. 5 second timers on there.
Yeah.
Secret videos and pictures all the time.
Enjoy and get.
Yeah, so you have all these manufacturers making these drones around the world, and when you come into this new technology, which adapts very well into drone technology, plus with artificial intelligence. So Diane's theory with the artificial intelligence coming out, that actually works quite well.
Is it better than Google? Because Google sucks.
Well, it actually works pretty good. Facebook is way into some AI technology, or whatever.
Right.
But you know, it's like even facial recognition, because if you have private sector do it, they do it right, because the FBI came out with facial recognition called Janus, I think it was.
Yeah,
it absolutely sucked. And then, you know, have the casinos that they're contracting with different people, and they can see you right when you walk in the door. And the FBI is like, "How are y'all able to do that?" It's because, you know, we're buying from the private sector. So that they finally, you know, pushed all that stuff off, and that's where it's at, and that's where we're at with these things. The big question is, and this still leaves the answers, the possibilities open. Did we reverse engineer this from other technology? Because we made such a drastic leap in technology.
Exactly.
And the other thing is obviously if there was 14 of these things flying around, and if they were ours, they got to be relatively cheap to make. That's what was actually the direction I was going in, because you can't hide a high-dollar item in black budgets before someone pays attention to it. These things, if you just look at their characteristics, or, you know, their flight characteristics and what they should cost, your mind would think, well, a fighter costs $15 to $100 million. Mm-hmm. These things got to cost a billion or more, like a B-2 bomber.
Not just that, but if you're talking about one of them that has the reflective or holographic technology to be projecting a fleet around them, because where I was kind of getting earlier with the whole resistive concept is that there are actively holograms that can be touched and felt.
Yeah.
Whoa.
And these things would be, this would be an embedded spoofing technology, which is done inside the actual hardware and software. And that, I believe, is part of the reason why they came on board the ship to take that off really quick, because if someone really went into it,
if someone ran across that those lines of code,
they would start seeing what's going
anything
on.
Like right. that absolutely right. because right. It, you could totally AI embed that you could program that into a passive chip that would take over as soon as it sees a radar signature,
right? Or as soon as a certain series of parameters are
met,
it would go, okay, I've been seen, now I have to pretend like I know what just saw me, and that's what happened to Captain Fravor, is it responded to him. Remember, Captain Fravor said that it noticed me.
Yes, so and that's exactly what the scientist said, was it was like it was playing a game of chase.
Right.
Yeah.
It was like it was playing a game of hide-and-go-seek.
And they were circling each other as it goes up, and then as soon as Captain Fravor made the decision to cut that circle in half and dip his nose down to come over,
as soon as he made it, not an evasive maneuver.
Mm-hmm. No, it was offensive. It was
an offensive maneuver.
That's when it took off. Now, the funny thing is, now this is where it gets really weird, is that when the object took off, it didn't take off and just leave. It went to the cap point, which is that space. It's called the civil air patrol. Is your air patrol point. And that air patrol point is where the pilots go to meet up to wait until, you know, everybody's there.
Yeah, that's their angel rendezvous.
Yeah, it's like a rendezvous point in space where they go, you know, or not space, technically space, but in 3D space. And say it's at 20,000 feet and it's at X number of coordinates. Well, this object, the Tic Tac, didn't appear at the cap point.
it appeared exactly on it, like to the height and exactly the point where it's supposed to be. Now, yeah. That...
As though it was following a GPS coordinate.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Right, or as right. though it went there and nanny, nanny, boo-boo. Yeah. It's like, come get me now. I know you were trying to get me, and I just went to your cat point.
Or the whole old Logos command of return home.
Right. Oh. Yep, exactly.
And whoop! Your cursor just goes back to the top of the screen.
So when you think that out, your mind starts saying... Okay, how in the world, because it's a secret, you know, they don't really broadcast that information
out.
And so how would this object know that point?
Yeah, well,
the easy answer, the Occam's razor version is, well, because it's our stuff, they knew where it was going to be, and that was our way of saying, hey, we beat you back to home plate, or, you know it's like you're playing hide and seek or whatever.
Told you.
I beat you back to home plate, here we are. And it's just that, and that's to say, hey.
Yeah, so about that bottle of scotch.
Yeah, exactly. So apparently, and if it was, and now think about this, if it was Chinese or Russian, do you think that we would have just said, whatever. Yeah,
exactly.
You win. Yeah, we'll just leave you alone now. No, right. I would be scrambling all kinds of planes, but they didn't do any of that.
Yeah.
They had several bases they could have pulled planes from, but they did none of that. That, again, tells me, okay. This is either A, it's our technology, or if you want to get really weird, if you want to bring in the alien component, you could say, or we're friends with them.
Right.
And we're going to say, come over here and,
Or, we're under full cooperation.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And that's just it.
And that's the only answer that makes sense.
Now, James has rang in again. Is this the video where the craft is docking and interacting with the underwater craft? Because that's actually one that you've brought up that you said if you had 5 minutes alone with Louis, that's what you would ask him about.
Is
the craft that are traveling just as fast underwater.
Mm-hmm.
Which even more proves the concept of that quantum vacuum technology.
Right.
Because, of course, I mean, good God, liquid is like 1,000 times thicker than air.
Yeah.
So for them to be able to travel anywhere near that speed underwater would require 10 to 20 times the thrust.
Well, the water is 25 times more dense than air.
Yeah.
So an object traveling underwater should go 25 times slower. And that actually occurs when you look at boats, you look at torpedoes and things like that. But through supercavitation, you have some torpedoes that can go up to 200 miles an hour. But they actually tracked an object going over 550 miles an hour underwater.
Which is close to 1,000 knots.
Which is hauling ass.
Yeah.
Underwater. And they were able to track this thing a little bit. So that brings up another question. But that hasn't been released to the public yet. But then you have the Customs and Border Patrol video that was taken in Puerto Rico where you see this object moving across the sky. It looks like a balloon that's caught in the wind when you first see it. And you're like, oh, that's interesting. But they obviously thought it wasn't just interesting because they saw it come in on radar.
Right.
Okay, so the radar's picking. Now, this is a normal radar, not just phased array radar, just regular radar. So this object's able to pick up. It's moving at about 80 to 100 miles an hour at times, sometimes as low as 40. But then as it moves across the airfield, Customs and Border Patrol plane has it, perfectly is tracking this thing.
Mm-hmm.
This guy is tracking this thing, and it dips into the water and then comes out of the water. And dips back into the water. It doesn't lose any speed at all. And then the last time it comes out of the water, it splits into two pieces, identical pieces, keeps going, goes back underwater, and then is not seen again. That's pretty bizarre. And that video has been analyzed to see if it's been faked or something like that. Because we get fakes all the time. There's a whole channel devoted to that.
Dude, I could sit back and just make videos all day if I wanted to. I got nothing better to do right now.
Love some
nothing
after
better to do right now, Mike.
What are you doing tomorrow? Let's make a whole group of
making more videos.
Yeah, that's right. So, that was you. This is the disclosure right here.
There may be a couple.
Mr. Gimbo.
So you have these videos that are unanswered that no one can really explain. So you got the three that are from that TTSA has pushed forward. Obviously, Lou has.
And I've
got some questions directly for Lou. If Lou was sitting across from me, I would ask him some straight on questions that no one seems to want to ask him.
Ask him right now. Hey, okay. Luis Elizondo, listen up.
Here's your first question. The 1910 forms, when you had those filled out or whatever, you basically got these videos and checked them out to yourself. how come you didn't follow the directive inside the 1910 forms, and how in the world did you not get in trouble for that? Not only did you not get in trouble for it, you actually were awarded a contract with the Army to basically study metamaterials. That would be one of the questions right there. That would be the first one.
And like we said before, maintained your security.
Maintained security clearance. Yep.
Security clearance and maintained another job.
Yeah. Doesn't get in
like
trouble
got moved on to another position.
Right, right. And then argues the point whether or not he was working there or not, because remember the DOD said, oh, Lou Elizondo was not, you know, didn't work for the ATIP program, and then all of a sudden he does. And then the videos were never truly, because keep in mind, the videos were not released by DOD. That's the when they first came out, people said, oh, these were released by DOD.
Right. No.
They were not. No. These videos were checked out, like going to a library, Lou's in there like going, writing up some crazy paperwork, like a fake note from, you know, from home, when you're like, I'm not really sick today, let me sign this doctor's note.
Yeah.
So he signs this paperwork over, which is the 1910 form of the military, is to declassify information so you can disseminate it to the public or to a contractor. And it specifically said you can only disseminate it to a contractor. So he takes these videos, and what does he do? He gives them to Blink-182's Tom DeLonge. There you go.
Yeah.
Rock and roll.
Okay. So they formed To the Stars. Now, I have to admit, To the Stars Academy, I don't have an issue directly with them because they brought a lot of attention to them.
Absolutely.
And we wouldn't be having this discussion tonight if it wasn't for that. So I applaud him on what he did.
Right.
But I have but it brings up questions.
How did he that not anyone, get in trouble?
Exactly. How do you not get in trouble for that? Okay. I know if I would have done, and keep in mind, too, that also kind of encourages some people to like, well, he didn't get in trouble. I guess I can start talking now, too. Yeah.
Makes me think it's crumbling from the inside. Or
something. It's not like the old thing, you don't ask, don't tell.
Right.
And now it's like, if you see something, say something.
Yeah.
And they're allowing it to happen.
And they're allowing it.
Yeah. Precisely.
So that's a big change, and that's neat to see. But then the other end of the spectrum is that you look at these videos and you go, okay. You have three different videos, three different craft, obviously, two different places in the country where they are. So the other question I would have is this. If you went out and analyzed these things and you haven't pressed the issue, that was a nice drum beat there.
Thank you.
I know it was.
I was like, dum,
dum, dum. Dude, I was going to start
dancing. Like a little pop filter action, folks.
Yeah, pop. So you have these things going on, and both incidents are within all the videos he put out. Were of videos of objects that were in a training area.
Yep.
Okay.
Every single one of them.
Every single one of them. And all of them were after Spy 1B radar upgrades. So you have that. And then you have the pilots are flying planes that have no weapons at all. Okay, and they're talking about seeing fleets of these things, and they're not scrambling a whole bunch of other things. I mean, if I saw something like this, especially Gimbal. Gimbal, for me, is my favorite.
Yes.
That thing's wild to watch it fly. It's flying against 120-knot headwind, and it's doing fine, and it's able to rotate in there.
Yeah.
And these guys don't look at it. It's rotating. Yeah. Call the president. I mean, somebody call in somebody to come out and find out what the hell this thing is. And that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Why did that not happen? That's another question I have for Lou.
Right.
That would be my first thing. I was like, wait a second. These things are flying at will. We're now saying that there's some form of national security threat, according to Rubio is saying.
Well, and that's just it. Right now, we do have Senator Mark Rubio out there right now asking whether or not we have to worry about whether or not we have to worry about craft that have appeared over our military bases, and that's just it, because not a single one of those was over a military base.
None of these were.
Right, no.
Not a single one. They were out over open water, over water that is used for, like, war games and all kinds of stuff. So, like, skirting on international water.
Right.
Literally as close as you could get to international water without being out in it, so that we're still in our controlled airspace.
Right.
Should something happen, like a stray round actually being a gun instead of fake ones.
Right. Right. Now, here's another interesting fact. Back during the Tic Tac event, that happened from, like, November 10th to November 14th or so of 2004. But at the exact same time frame, that whole area was being cleared out
because you were having a hypersonic missile test or a hypersonic weapons test. So that was the X-43, which happened on November 16th, 2 days after this event. So they were already down there making certain areas clear, blah, 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 because this thing, once it launches...
How convenient, right?
Yeah. And so this thing is a hyper, basically a hyper-speed missile, a scramjet missile that is able to achieve Mach 9 or higher. And so you have that as a cover. So they're probably thinking, well, just in case, let's go ahead and do this training exercise. And if someone sees this, if a civilian radar picks this thing up, we can say, oh, it's part of this X-43 project over. Now, that's the stretch. That's me bringing something into it that probably hasn't really been brought into it before. But it is odd that that was about the exact same time.
Yeah, right, you know, right. And I just brought up Mach speed on screen just so people can understand the concept of Mach 9.
You're mocking me right now.
Mach is just under the speed of sound.
No, yeah, well, technically, yes, it'd be just under. But the actual term Mach is mostly associated with actual speed of sound, which changes due to temperature, you know, humidity, things like that.
Yeah.
But at sea level, at 14.7 PSI, normal temperature, normal, you're looking at, say, 740 or so miles
exactly,
an hour.
Exactly, exactly.
So if you're at Mach 2, you're at 1,480 miles an hour and so forth. So they just multiply it up.
Double.
And the space shuttle, when it came in, it was at Mach 25, you know, coming in at 17,500 miles an hour. So you've got this object moving through the air at Mach 9, and it has to have tiles. It's heating up. It's doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And then it only can function at a high Mach speed. So they had to have a rocket push it to a high speed and then ignite it. And then this thing can take off with no moving parts, which we can actually make one of those. I was looking at this. I was thinking of making, if Justin Vavarka is watching tonight, we can make a rocket engine out of that thing tonight. But yeah, that was always fun stuff. You know, so this object, you know, you're looking at these craft, and the questions that Lou should be answering are those things. And of course, he doesn't have to, because right after he gets out, what does he have? A television show.
Right, exactly.
I mean, like, overnight, he's got a TV show, and you got Chris Mellon you bring on board, you got Al Putoff, and you have all of these people that are great. And I'm not talking about anything having to do with the credibility or whatever.
No.
But I have an issue that it seems like their agenda is to push the extraterrestrial origin side, because that would be a lot more interesting television show.
Disinformation.
Well, either disinformation or promotion.
Yes or no, because, that is part of what the latest report from New York Times has actively come out and said, is that there were off-world craft.
Well, that would be Eric Davis actually saying
off-world vehicles, not made on this Earth,
right,
is what they've claimed as of right now. This the article I have up right now is from National Review.
Yeah, how they come up with that?
That original article actually came out in New York Times, which interesting because Times was the first place it was leaked before it went to CNN with Luis Elizondo to begin with. They are and I hate going down this road, but a known Operation Mockingbird outlet, a known contributor to the CIA back in the day, things like that.
They got a way of doing it every time.
Okay, so
fun things on phones.
Yeah, this is a conversation I had with Eric Davis. I'll let you read it. So during this conversation, we were talking about several different things, and one of the subjects that came up was obviously the New York Times article.
Interesting.
And Eric stated to me, and I won't say the reason why, but I'll say that basically what he says here, which you just read, is that he will no longer be discussing the subject at all. So we're not going to get, you know, what's so funny about the New York Times article is that article. The big part of the article was what Eric Davis said.
Absolutely.
I mean, everyone gets to the 20-second paragraph and they're like, wait a second, this is what the article should be about, just said.
It's a sentence and a half.
Yeah, sentence and a half.
A sentence and a half.
And then that's it. So you wonder, okay, why wasn't the article weighted towards that? Because that's like a revelation that we actually have recovered aircraft or recovered spacecraft from wherever.
Right.
And so that brings up another issue.
Well, and granted, he didn't say... We have recovered spacecraft.
Right.
He technically said that what I've seen
is none of this
world. Would have to come from off-world vehicles, right. Not made on this Earth.
Right. And
it's a fine line difference.
There is. And that's where we need the clarification.
Exactly.
And guess what?
We ain't getting it.
We're not getting it. And so everybody is on there on Twitter and all these other places. No, yeah, they're arguing back and forth. I'm sitting there going, I'll just ask Eric directly. Just click, click, click. Yeah. And he's like, okay, well, it's not going to discuss that subject anymore. Right. And so I get it. I understand the situation. I understand the situation.
It reminds me of Roswell 1947 when the first headline come across and they redacted it.
Right. Ooh, Project Mogul. Yeah. And, you know, it was a weather balloon, blah, 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 yeah. And this other stuff. And, you know, the government is famous for, and everyone knows I used to work for the government. So, but there's the issue that, from the government. We're here to help you.
That's right. Yeah.
So, I mean,
I'm not the biggest Reagan fan in the world, but that is one of my favorite quotes in the world.
Yes.
And the 10 scariest words in the world. We're from the government, and we're here to help.
That's right. Exactly. So your first thought
still
is...
still gives me goosebumps.
Reagan was awesome. I mean, his speeches were just really second to none.
Yeah, that's absolutely
awesome. So you sit back and you wonder, is the government really here to help us? Well, you know, you ask 100 people, 99. Are going to say, what Kool-Aid are you drinking? So you sit back and you go, okay. So we have to actually sift through what's fed to us and figure out what's legitimate, what's not. What am I going to believe? What am I not going to believe? And that's where even somebody that works there, because even being in a compartmentalized security clearance area where you're sitting there, you're going, okay, well, I think I know what this does, but because I don't know what that department over there is doing or this contractor over here is doing, I don't know what this component is going to be added to make it do something else.
Right.
Well,
they only give you a piece.
And yeah. Granted, they learned this years and years ago. Mm-hmm. They learned it during the time of the Truman administration, during my wife out front, you met her earlier.
Mm, sure do.
Steve knows her.
Not better.
She don't trust nobody.
Don't blame her.
Yeah.
I don't trust me either.
But also holds the fact of there's no way that many people could be that damn coordinated.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Just no way. It's the government.
Right.
No way. My comeback to that always is don't forget Trinity.
Mm-hmm.
Never forget Trinity. Right. Never forget the fact that there were hundreds of thousands of Americans working on parts in factories every day.
But it was only one.
They're
part.
Going. Yeah. I wonder what the hell this does. Yeah.
People like my grandmother who were sitting on an assembly line, going through and going, click next, click next, and those parts were for an atomic bomb,
and
they had no idea.
Right.
No idea. They were making hundreds of thousands of parts a day.
Right.
Maybe only 1,000 of them got used. The rest of it was all subterfuge or being used for other projects.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But the fact of compartmentalization in departments came about then.
Los Alamos.
And you know, when you start talking about those black projects, when you start talking about putting things into the hands of government contractors, people like Robert Bigelow's, that kind of stuff, who straight up has, for the last decade, has said out loud in interviews, from the things I have seen and the things that my company has had access to, we are not alone.
Well, that's where you have the advantage of a contractor like Robert Bigelow, and you, they get to actually see the because he has to put stuff together.
Yeah.
You know,
okay, quite literally.
These things are coming in, so
he
you have an outside.
Move on, too, I think.
No. He's
a big part of it, though?
He had a program called NIT. Was it NIDS, right?
Yeah.
He had that program where they were actually studying the it's kind of a similar function that MUFON had, but he was actually, you know, had
it was
material.
It was definitely field investigative work.
Oh, okay.
Right. Now, I'll bring up a program that I think should be enacted that I am willing to actually do. Is that me or you?
That's you. Nice. I don't have a T-Mobile.
No,
really.
I don't have that one either.
Oh, it is me. All right,
that's not me.
Somebody's playing a joke on
my phone's on stun.
We know it. That's who called earlier. So you have this scenario where you have contractors that actually know pretty much what's going on and all of these things coming together.
Mm.
So as they put these pieces together, then you have contractors like a Lockheed or you have that are competing with each other. So they have to make the complete component. And so what they've kind of shifted from is to guard a lot of that secret technology that's going on is that each contractor competing with each other will get the overall technology that, say, DARPA helped develop, or Air Force Research Laboratory, or Navy Research Laboratory. And then that technology goes in and says, okay, we're going to give both of you what we found, this technology, and let's see what you come up with.
Yeah, here's your new passive field resistive radar.
Right.
Let's see what you can do with a moving craft.
Right. And so in the old days, you would have, okay, we were able to develop this unique power source. And then this other company was able to develop this unique way of making a craft not weigh so much.
Right.
Well,
so, you know, they're competing against each other and nothing really got done. Now you give both technologies to each company and see what they come up with. That's why you have Bimble. That's why you have GoFast.
Yep.
That's why you have TicTac.
Well, and even if you look back at the days, once again, just to bring it back to Northrop Grumman and Lockheed Martin, go back to the days of HabBlue.
Right.
The precursor to the F-17. Yeah, precisely. The real first steps in stealth technology between the SR-71 and the F-117. Once they were both given the concept of the metamaterial, the things that started happening between both of them, as far as radar cross section, as far as heat dissipation, to be able to be spotted by thermal, they were almost tracking square on with each other, like throughout the project.
Right.
And the only way that happens is, like you're saying, to be given preemptive access. It's not like, here's what we want. Start from the drawing board. Come to us with what you got. It's more, here is the technology. Let's figure out how to apply it, gentlemen.
Right. And the one thing I can't rule out is the possibility, however remotely small I may think it may be, is that we did get some of this technology from somewhere else.
Right.
You know, so Bob Lazar is still going strong.
Absolutely. I've right up on screen. It's almost like you saw that in my head.
I was waiting for that name.
Because, my God, he's a dream guest. I'm connected with him on a couple forms of social media. His new movie, fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Great stuff out there. I've seen it about a good three or four times. It's one of those that whenever I'm working out in the living room.
Element 115, and it was crazy back when he said it.
Whenever he said that, Unimpentium.
Yeah.
Whenever he said that Unimpentium existed, here was an element on the not on the periodic chart that had these properties and provided these outcomes.
Right.
And people were like, okay, well, you're a crazy person.
And that's the broad spectrum you have with Bob, is that people either think he's a quack or they think he's the shit.
I've thought he's the shit since I got his friggin' model when I was like 12 years old. All right. but the fact is, my God, all of a few years ago, they added Element 115.
Right.
Like, it exists. What is it? Muscovium. Muscovium is what it's actually called.
They should call it Lazarium.
They should, and that's what a lot of people were saying, was that call it Lazarium. Call it Lazarium. Just call a spade a spade already. Exactly. Come on. The man was right. Admit it. You found an element within the heavy metals, like he was talking about, that fits these properties.
Like 115 electrons or something or other?
And then, you know, of course, it's not a stable thing, so you can't hold on to it.
It's there and it's gone.
Right.
Hence the name, Unimpentium.
Right, exactly. And then you have George Knapp, who comes out and basically, you know, gets that story out about Bob Lazar and hardly none of Bob Lazar's stories have been truly debunked and discredited. Yep. Although people can argue whether or not those things can happen or not.
People have gone through for years and debunked his creds, said that he did not have the... But the thing is,
how in the hell does he know his way around Los Alamos?
But also the fact of, if you were that in deep in a program,
and who takes
they would be cleansing your.
And who can take George Knapp out there to the desert and say it's going to appear at this like 7:30 or something? And
on a Wednesday,
and there it is. There it is.
There it is.
Yeah,
that's how that works. And so, you know, there's a lot of people that are in that
category that end up chasing their own tail to try to prove what they're saying is accurate or this or that. And yep. I can kind of empathize with that to a degree. And then what you have here is that is Bob Lazar being vindicated like Joe Rogan said? Remember Joe Rogan comes out and he says, since 1989 he's finally been vindicated. Well, then, of course, you have to question, vindicated by Eric Davis, who basically said that he's a quack. No, I don't see how. Yeah. I don't think Eric would do that.
Right.
But at the same time, through a passive way of doing it, a lot of people are being vindicated right now.
Right.
Because there's a lot of people that were talking about technologies that people are going, oh, these things are using artificial intelligence to fly around. Well, you know what? They are.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, it's not like, and people thinking that these things are going to take over the world or some, you know, one of these things is going to have an idea and become self-sentient and start flying around bombing people because you are ineffective.
Yeah, Skynet, right? Freaking Skynet.
Bye-bye. And, but
Schwarzenegger.
Give me your hand.
Yeah. Come with me if you want to live.
Yeah, so all this is very interesting, but this thing, when you
get
know,
out.
Right when this came out, within a matter of months, you have all of these different theories about what these things are, and I sat there for 2 years before I really came out and said anything about it. Of course, I was dealing with the Las Vegas issue, too, but finally, I was like, you know what, I called my source, and I said, hey, you know, you had mentioned to talk about this, or you wanted this information out, do you actually want to do this? And he said, yeah, but I don't want to be a part of it because I've already seen what's going on with all these other people.
Right.
And I'm like, all right, so you still want your story told? He says he thinks it's important, but he doesn't know if it's going to mean anything. And overall, it really, because my original story, I just heard the comms over the phone, didn't know nothing about it. 15 years later, I'm like, oh, that's what those were. And then things start clicking. So I call him back and say, hey, and then we start talking again and just brought some stuff forward. And then he remembered some other things over the years and told me some other stuff. And that's why I went the route that I did with it being a domestic product manufactured by us. You know, and some things have changed over the years, but overall, it's still pretty much the same.
That's where the logic holds, at least in my mind going through, because, I mean, you know me. I'm a believer.
Yeah.
Like, heart of hearts. I'm a believer. The odds on favorite is that we are not alone.
Correct.
And whether or not this technology was reverse engineered, whether or not we were given this technology, granted this technology, whether or not this technology, as some people have held right now, maybe came through the realm of time travel.
Could be.
Yeah.
Maybe came through the realm of interdimensional contact.
Right. Interdimensional. Right.
And so nothing
could very well be.
All right. And so I take a lot of heat. I'm pretty much rejected by a whole lot of people. But one of the things I did was I first broke the story. I said, listen, there was a briefing that was in 2005 that this information came out of. And that was on November 4th of last year. And then, you know, of course, I get lambasted on the internet for all this other stuff. Blah, blah, blah. And then what happens? Within 2 months, a FOIA request comes back saying that, there was a briefing. And some of these slides or whatever that were developed for the briefing are still classified and things like that. So whether or not it's the exact same briefing, I don't know. That remains to be seen. I would love to know which briefing it was. But, you know, the information still needs to make sense. If you're going to put pieces of the puzzle together, you need to make a sense. But the advantage is that even if this is true, that it is our technology, it still allows for all of the other theories to be partially or at least, you know, pretty much correct.
Right, absolutely.
Right, yeah. Right. It doesn't destroy any of it.
No.
It can still be extraterrestrial in origin, maybe not that specific craft.
Right, right. Yep.
But the technology that developed it, we could have garnered it some other way.
The heart of it. Right. And you know, like the good scientist was saying earlier in the video, just the fact of 5 years ago, we were looking at being able to make a nuclear reactor or nuclear fusion.
Mm-hmm.
Reactor,
right.
Not fission reactor.
Fusion
reactor.
Compact one.
10 times smaller than a building. The size of a truck.
A truck, you said, yeah.
Size of like an 18-wheeler.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're talking the size of an 18-wheeler.
Right.
How about one this size?
That's
I bet you. Yeah.
Five, 10 years down the line from that point? Mm-hmm. Damn right. Because like he was saying, there are numerous iterations that they could go through in a year.
But here's the interesting thing.
From he literally said, from concept to product in months.
Right. Now, that gives it the ability to make an enormous amount of energy from a very small, compact source. But in talking to the physicists that I've been talking to, like Jack Sfardi and Eric Davis and several others, over the last 6 months to a year, some of what I'm learning, because I'm not a physicist, but, you know, I dabble in that area a little bit, so I can speak about it, but not with any authority.
You're like me. You speak nerd.
But. Yeah, I speak nerd, but you put some formulas in front of me, and I'll probably stare at them and go.
E=mc².
So the concept you're talking about is this.
Yeah, exactly. So I get all that, and so I start looking at it, and I'm like thinking, okay, so now I have to try to make this make sense, because I jumped into this thing, and I'm not a ufologist or anything like that. I mean, you know what I do. And so I sit there and go, what am I doing? Because when you, from the outside, when you look into the UFO world, the first thoughts are, whoa, okay. Yeah. And when you jump in, it's almost like an accepted thing. You have to accept everyone's thing, even though you turn around and you go, holy crap, what the hell was that all about? But a lot of times you go, now I'm thinking, wow, used to think that way.
Right.
And now I'm talking to people. Now it's starting to make where some of this may make sense. A little piece of the puzzle here, a little piece there, and it all comes together. And that makes it make sense as to why some people think the way they do. You know, and I'm not saying that they think a bad way.
That's right.
Or there's no right or wrong. It's just that there seems to be a lot more answers to a lot more of what we're seeing here. We're looking at this, and a lot of the technology that we're saying that had some major thing had to happen for us to get it.
Right, exactly.
You know, it's almost like an evolutionary thing where aliens had to come down with monkeys and all of a sudden humans are around.
Well,
it's almost that drastic of a change of the evolution into technology. So
yes and no.
And
but
no, exactly.
See, here's the thing. Like going out and working the conferences that I work, going out and working things like NVIDIA, where I get to sit and hear people from Lockheed Martin who are astrophysicists who literally work on how we get to from point A to point B in space.
Right.
And they're like live mapping the surface of the sun with graphics cards on my screen.
Right.
And when you hear the head of Lockheed Martin come in and talk with the head of the Drone Racing League about how not only are they getting ready to have the first human versus drone racing league.
Oh, I've heard about that.
But in addition to that, that Moore's Law is about to collapse.
It already has.
By all realms of physics that we know, the concept of computers every 6 months doubling in speed and capacity is ready to collapse. And like you said, it has.
Yeah.
Like that was about a year and a half ago that we did that episode from Washington, D.C. At the NVIDIA conference.
So now you have, with Moore's Law collapsing, you have essentially, we're not going to be making those drastic leaps or whatever, except every few years. It'll be a ridiculous leap of some sort of...
But that's just it. Anything that's on our shelf is years backdated.
Yeah.
Years and years backdated, if we ever actually see the real technology that gave birth to it.
Right.
So whenever you start talking about that and say, like, you know, it took some kind of extraterrestrial leap for us to get there.
Not necessarily. It's just like when the transistor came
out. I'm a believer.
Exactly.
Yeah, because we went from the vacuum tube to the transistor in a heartbeat.
Well, look at quantum computing. Okay,
sure.
So you have two computers sitting inside the same building at 9800 Savage Road up in Fort Meade, Maryland. Okay, so you have one computer over here that's basically a huge supercomputer. Okay, that takes up mega amounts of rooms, maybe 2,000 different processors. And in this other room, you have this little, telephone booth size thing. And this one little chip in there that is going to beat that whole room. You actually had to call to the actual electric authority in Baltimore and say, we're about to turn this thing on.
Just so you know.
You're going to get a brownout every time they turn the computer on. So then you have the D-Wave, which is the quantum computers that they have there.
And they're starting to develop the ability, obviously, to use, you know, three instead of binary. You have zeros and ones. You have the other one, which is maybe. So you have take an equation that would normally take 10,000 years for that one supercomputer to do, and it can do it in, I think it was 200 minutes or something like that. It was able to calculate and figure that thing out. Whoa. So now that is that drastic of a difference. So Moore's Law has gone out of the equation one way, but a new thing has come in another way, that some of the leaps and bounds that we make in the technology, the breakthroughs that we're going to make, are of such a significant change that, you know, 5 years from now, we would look back and go, wow, we're used to, we'd say 20 years. And keep in mind, 40 years ago, remember when we were in high school, we're sitting there, oh, we're going to have fusion in 10 years. We're going to have fusion in 10 years. And it's still not here. But yeah.
We did.
Yeah.
We had it.
Yeah.
We had it. Yeah. And it was in less than 10 years.
Yeah. Exactly. It's just, we're going to keep it for ourselves until we have some other reason to bring out. And because, gee, we got all these fossil fuels that my daddy's making so much money selling.
Yeah. And just to bring this up a little bit more for you folks, here's a recent article that was shared to the Dudes and Beer Facebook page all of a week or so ago from Singularity Hub, the amazing new computer chip that is made of live brain cells. That is where computing is going.
Yep.
Wow.
We are getting beyond the point of it just being a randomization of ones and zeros, an organization of ones and zeros, and really bringing it to the point of
Organics
and being able to think.
Right.
I mean, right now we've got Elon Musk saying that the Neuralink will be available within a year or so.
Yeah.
And stream music straight to your brain.
Yep.
In a year. Wow.
Man, they're talking pretty fast because they've been in development on Neuralink for a good 5-6 years now.
Well, I remember the Neurophone. You remember the Neurophone, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever messed with Chris. I've messed with it. Mm. Yeah,
they even had, it was like probably 15, 20 years ago. They had a headset that you could actually put on and you could actually fly a plane on your computer at home. But it was super simple to figure out how to manipulate it. And once you did, then you realize, wow, I wonder how far this can go. So imagine if that was just something that they just, you know, basically you wrap a metal detector around your head and you start thinking a different way and you, you know, concentrate one way and you can make the plane bank left or bank right, you know, depending on what you wanted to do. So now take that a few steps forward, and that's obviously where Elon Musk is going. And, you know, you can imagine if you walked in their laboratories as to what – I mean, I had the pleasure of being there at SpaceX last July 23rd, I think it was.
Yeah.
Nice.
And it was neat. I got to park in the black parking lot and go into the Dragon facility, and I was like, wow, this is crazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, those are things when you work in or you go to these places that do this technology and you see that leap of what's 5-10 years from now, the weird thing is this. They're working on stuff that in our minds we think is going to come out in 5 years. By the time they get to that, to the 5-year mark, they've already got something that has leaped it and they're going to hold this back and not even produce it and get the new item out.
Yep.
Yeah, and so that's kind of where we're at on something, because a lot of people wonder, well, where are the flying cars at? You know?
Yeah. Well, there's bigger issues than flying cars, folks.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't want Uncle John flying over my house drinking a beer, throwing bananas at people. You know, what the hell is this guy doing? Yeah. So
Not when a drone could do it for you.
Exactly.
And that's exactly the article that I just brought up on screen a minute ago was from Forbes, Mind Control Drones, Not As Far As Way As You Might Think.
No.
That's from April of last year. Before that was when the one I was trying to find was the one from Jane's Defense Weekly.
Oh.
That was talking about the fact that pilots can now control up to 3 drones from their helmet.
Right.
What?
And have full spatial awareness, a 360-degree view in the cockpit.
Yeah.
Yeah,
wow.
That's amazing. Imagine looking down and seeing right through your cockpit with the headset you have on, and then on top of that, being able to control your 3 wingmen just by going...
Yep.
Go get it.
Non-communicative... communications, like no words necessary.
Wow.
Being able to release a swarm of drones as opposed to chaff that just kind of goes out in the air and falls and fools missiles. This is like a, hey, come chase me instead.
Right.
drone that can be going off and swarm of drones.
Dude, that's amazing.
So,
man.
Yeah, I mean, these are things that are no longer science fiction.
Right, right.
They are fully science fact. We are dealing with them. They're here. This technology exists.
Yeah, Star Trek, like, we left Star Trek way behind.
Well, the funny thing about Star Trek is think of the technology that Star Trek alluded to back in the mid-60s.
That's right.
You know, the tablet. The flip phone?
Before that, dude, like I thought about starting up a podcast with my brother because he's a huge science fiction buff, mm-hmm. like huge. And I'm a big classic radio buff.
Okay.
So whenever I'm on the road, I'm typically, as I go to bed, like listening to old school sci-fi radio shows.
War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
And, well, one of them that I love is X-1.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first episodes of X-1, I think it was like the third or fourth episode, literally talks about this computer that was made by mankind to ease the troubles and issue. And granted, this is like the 1940s, early 50s, mm-hmm. folks.
Damn.
They're talking about this computer that was made by the scientists of mankind to solve the major issues of mankind,
right.
so that we didn't have to think about that anymore. Hmm. And it was so advanced that it stored data on atoms.
Mm-hmm. And guess what?
That it wrote data on atoms. Yeah. We're talking quantum computing in like 1946.
Right.
Yeah. That's insane.
We had barely mastered flight.
Yeah.
We had yet to travel supersonically.
Right. And here you
Yet still we're talking about the possibility of writing information on atoms.
Yep.
Wow.
Absolutely.
And this is where the mind of science fiction was so long ago.
Right.
And even to take that one step further.
Was it somebody's imagination or was it somebody with knowledge?
Well, and, you know.
Did they come from the future?
And that's a big question. You know, one of the big ones that I want to have on right now is Michael Sala.
Okay.
To actively talk with him.
Not familiar with him. No.
Yeah. He is from exopolitics.org, folks.
He's cool.
He is a great guy. I love reading all of his stuff. And the one that I am trying to find here is the declassified document for Project Horizon. Because there is literally just a world of declassified information out there, folks. And here it is. I'll bring it up as I actively bring it up because it may take a second or two to come live. It's like 100-and-something page PDF, folks. But feel free to go on by the Dudes and Beer Knowledge Vault to the declassified section. The first document there is Project Horizon from 1959. Mm. And just talking about our new space program, talking about our new space force, things like that. The fact that people think that this is something new, that this is a new concept, is pretty funny.
Yeah. Yep. It is.
We have had the United Space Command.
Yeah. Well, you had the Ninth Wing, and you had you have your ISR, which is going to be, you know, a mixture of several wings, but you had Space Command for the longest time, and effectively Space Force is literally Space Command.
I was going to say.
On steroids.
Yeah, on steroids. Right. Just basically moved over. Yeah. It's the same number of people.
They got more than radar now.
Yeah, they have a similar job. Yeah, they got a lot more now.
Are you ready for a tic-tac? Yeah.
So
we can chase it now.
Yeah, right. So all of this new technology, and I guess it's appropriate that Trump gets to push that forward because I couldn't see that occurring under a Democratic Red White House. I just don't see that pushing forward. So I'm glad that it's done. It's entrenched because the Navy has the Marines, which is the offshoot of the.
That's right.
Air Force has Space Force, which is already something they're used to. But now it also makes the inner workings between the especially the intelligence agencies being able to work together. You got all these that are under the DOD, which is NRO, NSA, all these different agencies that can now more directly interact with the technology that they are going to be utilizing, which we could get into that, but that's a whole nother show.
A whole nother world, a whole nother show, and I just wanted to bring this one up because 1959, like here we are in 1959 talking about an actual program mm-hmm. to build a lunar base.
Yeah. And we hadn't even put a man in space at that point.
Nope. Jeez. Nope. Absolutely not. And like, here we go. Like, 1961. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just to see the signatures that are on this and the people that are involved in that project in and of itself in 1959.
Right.
These are long, long held concepts, folks.
Yeah, and these are nothing new. People back then.
These are nothing new. We, of course, had people like the good Alan J. Hynek, things like that, who were in charge of Project Blue Book that were great scientists, but quite obviously in charge of just kind of muddying the waters,
yeah.
Let's just say.
Yeah.
And purposefully muddying the waters, I think.
Yeah.
If anything, to keep a hat over exactly what Truman was saying as he left, was so many times we play his outro speech. But the point that I always bring up is listen to the desperation in his voice before he brings up those immortal words of beware the industrial military complex. Mm. And what he basically says is...
I thought that was Eisenhower that did that. Wasn't it Eisenhower?
Yes, sorry. But it's the fact of we had to go through extreme measures to make this happen.
Right.
We had to get rid of some of your rights. We had to give people power that they probably shouldn't have.
Yeah,
Keep that in check. Mm-hmm. Get rid of that because you don't want that.
Right. And that's Big Brother looking over us, making the decisions for us and things like that. And there is a certain point where enough is enough.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, if Lou at TTSA is basically holding a lot of information in that he's going to slowly reveal through his television program because he thinks they need to do this TV show to slowly allow us to build up to this. No, it's not. Not really necessary.
So now he's using it to his benefit. If that was,
yeah,
not necessary, but it sure is a way to
right. But I also wonder: is he being fed information to make him believe all this? And is he legitimately? Does he not know that he's doing this or a part of it? Do I not know that I'm legitimately a part of this or whatever? Is someone feeding me crap?
And that's just it. Like, that's a lot of what we talk about on this show is the process of disinformation, is the purposeful process of disinformation, leaking things, making sure that truth is obfuscated.
Yeah, and that's why I physically leave where I'm at and I go to these places. And I check it out for myself because to have information fed to me, I just can't deal with that. So I have to go do it. And it puts me in a weird spot a lot.
Yeah.
which is very frustrating because, you know, you just have to deal with the outcome from it. And you lick your wounds and move on.
Yeah.
But when you start looking at what you're trying to get, the information you're trying to get out to the public, you find yourself holding some back.
Right.
And then you go, I'm a miniature government right now.
Yeah.
Because I'm actually sitting on three pieces of information that I would just love to stream out right now.
But you can't.
But you can't.
Responsibly, you can't.
Yeah.
I normally wait for my typical at least three confirmations.
Mm-hmm.
One of those has to be from outside of the United States.
Yeah.
So, in other words, you're waiting for that one other person to kind of, or three other persons, according to you, right?
That's just me. Yeah. Like, whenever I'm looking at a story, it will be rare that I post anything to the Dudes and Beer group without it being somewhere else.
Oh, yeah.
So he's waiting for someone to call me and say,
It's hard to take the first step, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I don't want your Chinese seeds. Thank you.
I was going to send you some Chinese seeds. and that becomes a true issue for a lot of people. When they sit there, and like Lou may be going through the exact same thing.
Right.
That's
38 different dirds that he has that, you know, each one a little different. Some of them still classified. Some of them have been leaked out to the public. And you start looking at him and you're going, okay, I can see where some of this he has to work with. And he's like, I got to protect my security clearance. Well, you screwed that up when you did the 1910 form, so I'm not falling for that one anymore. But I still want to take a look at what else we have to offer, you know, for everyone. And when is this going to occur? Yeah. You know, there's a certain point where we're all itching. We want it in our lifetime and things like this. And then you have outside people who are not necessarily contractors for the government, like a SpaceX, who come in and actually wax everyone's butts. They come in and are able to do the job 1,000 times better.
Well,
you know, and God, when we watched the two men launch or 2 months ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, or yeah. Last month. You did that not look like a scene out of a sci-fi movie or what?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the most unbelievable. Totally. It was just incredible to watch that, how clean it was and all this other stuff. And you look at it and you go, okay, that's the direction
that
we should be going in. And yeah, we should just allow these visionaries go in and do this and not have all these contracts with all these different companies. If you just shifted some of those monies around just a little bit.
Well, and I think that's really
exactly.
The idea, though, is the obfuscation.
Yeah.
Being able to obfuscate it, of course, being able to find these things, keep the technology for ourselves as long as possible.
Sure.
Because, of course, industrial espionage happens, military espionage happens, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. So
Russian space shuttle?
Yeah. And yeah. It's just one of those, how do you... As someone like Mark Rubio, who sits on a Senate Intelligence Committee, how do you react to these things? How do you react to the fact that there's something quite obviously that even our most professional pilots are like, whoa, check that thing out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you look at somebody that's brought in from a civilian community and they're brought in and they obviously – become privy to information. Governor Bob Graham, when he left and became went in the Senate, and he also went through the same thing. And I knew him. And when you're in the same room and you're both looking at the same thing, and you're like, "Huh, that's crazy. How much money do you need?" You know, and the money that they need is to develop it and to keep it a secret at the same time. So that's why some of these are exorbitant costs. So if they just stopped making it secret so much and went ahead and just developed it and just dealt with the outcome.
That's right.
Then, because that's what it's going to get to anyway. At some point in time, we're going to have to deal
You're going to have to deal with the fallout regardless.
Right. So you look at open source. The internet is a classic example. We all deal with the problems with the internet. But when they put that out there, that was a game changer.
That's
so
right.
If you just did that with this technology alone, let's just pick on this stuff here.
Yep.
If this is truly ours, then give it to the world now. Who cares if China has it, Russia has it, or whatever? And if they start developing weapons and missile systems from
truly go Elon Musk with it, where it's like, here's our patents, do something with it.
Yeah,
right.
Here you go. And make it open source if necessary. Whatever you need to do, so that way mankind truly benefits from it.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's how I think. And that may be the age group that we are, that we grew up in, and stuff like this. But at the same time, we start looking at things, and then we're programmed. It's like, well, we got China over here.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm like, guess what? You've never been to China. As soon as someone says that crap to me, I'm like, you haven't been to China. Yeah. And they're like, what do you mean? I said, I've been to China over 20 times. If you go to China, your opinion of China will completely change. Same thing if you go to Russia. Same thing if you go anywhere.
Right.
It's the you have the people and then you have the government. And it does change how you
perceive. I spent a semester abroad in college, and you know what? I love my country. The way I look at my country changed. I can utterly see why people see us the way they do. Yep. As far as world governments go, we pretty young.
Yep.
We're pretty visionary, but we're pretty young also.
Yep.
So whenever it's one of those like, hey, look at us, we're the best thing around. Democracy is a pretty cool concept.
Mm-hmm.
Being a republic is a much cooler and older concept than democracy.
Mm-hmm.
sorry, folks. But, we are not the utter and the best at everything. We're not.
No, we're not.
And to have that attitude whenever you travel abroad is where that comes from.
It even comes from, if you think about how this country came about to begin with, you have Columbus come over, okay? Well, he never stepped foot in the United States.
I was going to say.
But he discovered America. But people were already there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the arrogance part of that, we can go back all the way there and go, okay, so we can look at all the different things. But
nice that you found my neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, how are you?
did you discover the neighborhood?
Yeah, exactly.
There were already people living there. Sorry that you just found it.
That's right. And we're not Indians. You needed to go a few more thousand miles.
Yeah.
You know, so you look at it from the foundation, from a That's government right. standpoint, which actually has a need for in society. Same thing with like, let's defund the police. Well, okay, let's try that. Let's check out Seattle or Portland or something.
Woo.
You know, so when you look at that, you understand, okay, there is a need for it, but there's also, we're getting away from that balance in certain areas.
That's right.
When it comes to this kind of stuff, then that balance is no longer truly necessary.
Yeah,
I just don't see it anymore.
And right.
Yeah, and that's absolutely truly sad. And, you know, when it comes to this declassification, when it comes to this stuff finally being told to us, where the sources come from, whether they be earthly, I don't care. I'm not concerned. I don't think it's going to change mankind that much at this point. But we definitely do need to progress, move on.
Yeah.
It is time for that next step.
Yeah.
It's time to let people know things. So, Mike, thanks as always for coming on the show, man.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad I happened to be.
It's
in
always
town today.
Always a great and revelatory conversation. I'm so glad that you were actually able to come in, be in studio for this, and for us to meet face to face the first time.
So nice meeting this guy.
Epic,
yeah, dude.
Steven, buddy, buddy, I love you, bro. Thank you so much for coming on tonight.
What a hell of a fifth anniversary!
I know, man. It's been a heck of a ride, and to be where we are now, from where we started in episode two, man. It's a great thing. It's a beautiful thing. Thank you so much for being there,
Woo!
Steve. Audience, thank you all so much for being there this whole time. Keep tuning in. Keep coming back. Check us out on dudesandbeer.com. That's where you can find everything from 5x5 News on our video section there on their YouTube page. Website coming soon, hopefully, from them. Until next time, everybody, remember, if you can't be good, be good at it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Dudes and Beer Podcast. To listen to our audio streams or chat with us live, download the official Dudes and Beer app for Android and iDevices, available on Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Breach.tv, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more about our sponsors and other podcasts on this network, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody, and until next time, drink responsibly.